welcome. I'll call you Babs, to the Mindful You podcast. And as we talked about, your last name is Carol and my last name is Carol. So we are connected. We have the oneness and we also have the interested in mindfulness. And so welcome, Babs, to the Mindful You podcast. How are you today?
Thank you. I'm wonderful. Glad to be here.
Well, I am excited that you're here. And when we talk to folks about oneness and we talk to folks about mindfulness, we talk to folks about spirituality, there seems to be a time in the timeline of their existence on the planet in which an event occurs, which something happens that wakes up the dormant spiritual state, and from the egoic blanket that sort of covers everything with our thoughts, we have a wake-up call or something happens in one's life. And as I was reading your bio, you certainly had something happen to you in your life, and I'll let you share that with the audience. And I suspect that something around that event caused a crack in the cosmic egg that allowed a spark of, you use the word grace, to happen, like a light began to happen in the darkness, in the very dark places, a spark of light, and you woke up, and if I have it right, you woke up and you began to use the light, the light of grace, to illuminate your reality and begin to illuminate the realities of other people through your story, through your words, through your trainings, through your coaching, through your programs and speeches that you do. So I'm happy to have you here today to be able to share your story and the breakthrough and how it helps other people to understand your story will help them if they are struggling or trying to figure out to deal with issues in their life, as well as become more spiritual and more mindfulness, because I'm a big fan of that. So let me give you the baton now, Babs, and have you, take us on a journey into the world of Babs.
Well, Alan, thank you. And, it's just really an honor to be here, not only with you, but with your audience. And I love when people are tuning in to hear the stories of others and to hear how that might uplift or help redirect or help give some insights into what your audience may be facing in their own lives in today's day and age. And so, you talked about, a singular moment of clarity or a single moment of awakening. And what I'm learning is that there are innumerable moments of awakening. And what for me is really making a big difference is recognizing that in that innumerable amount of awakenings is that they really do come together in a place to jolt us when we need that jolt. And so you kind of alluded to it, but I think you're probably alluding to a different awakening moment than I'm going to share, because I'm going to go back to that starting awakening moment. And really for me, it was a compilation of moments. Back in 2007, I had a neurological oncologist, top of his field, Mayo Clinic, gave me 6 weeks. They had done absolutely everything they could do from a medical perspective, and my cancer was not responding positively to them. It was responding very positively in my body. And so there becomes this space where when leading up to that moment, you recognize that you're a rule follower, that you're a person who shows up and shows out and does what is expected, whether it be a personal goal or agenda, or whether it be the expectations that society has put on us. That was me. I did what was expected of me because that's how I was raised. And I believe that by doing that, you'll be successful, you'll be healthy, the world's going to take care of you. Well, when at 35 years old, you get that expiration date for the first time, it rattles you. it absolutely rattles you. And look, I'd love to say to you, I went home and said, no, that's just not going to be my truth. And I just, you know, set about turning the next page. I didn't, man. I did what most people do. I went home and cried for 3 days.
You bet.
I totally went home and cried. It's like, are you kidding me? Again, I was a rule follower. I did what I thought was expected of me. So how now could this be the outcome? And so as fate would have it, I woke up on that third morning and I said, with such clarity, so it had to come from something beyond me. Well, that's his opinion. And that's his best sense of right, but that's just his opinion. What if there's something more out there? What if there's something different out there for me? Well, I had spent the first 35 years of my life orchestrating my experience to make sure that everybody around me was happy. And so in that moment, that aha moment was less about what was opening up and more about my actual presence in life. And that I had no idea what made me happy. I had no idea who I was. I had no idea what I believed, because I had borrowed all of this, whether it be expectations or projections or beliefs, from those around me in an attempt to do what I thought was right in a space of making others around me happy. So I began to question absolutely everything that I had been raised with, that I had been taught in grammar school, in college, things that my friends, I thought I believed about them and me and my relationships. And in that place of questioning, I began to realize that the most important act is not finding the answer. It's questioning without already knowing the answer. So those of us who have been in sales in our life, you know the old adage, you never ask a question you don't already know the answer to. Well, that works in sales sometimes, but it doesn't work in our spiritual life. Because if we walk into a question thinking we already know the answer, then what we miss is the true revelation of what life really truly is in its fullness. We don't miss the answer completely. We just don't get a full reveal of that because we're walking in with a certain set of lenses that we're going to look at the answer from. And oh, by the way, how many times have we gone to prayer or meditation with a question? And well, we get an answer, but we really don't like it. So what do? We go back to prayer and meditation with that same question. So I learned the value of learning how to properly question. And that was a life changer for me, because I began to stop looking externally for my answers. An avid reader, an avid student, an avid, you know, a seeker. I wanted knowledge and wisdom. And I felt like that knowledge and wisdom would be power, but I was looking externally for these things. And what happened in those weeks and months after that was I actually began to learn that there was a book, Everything I Needed to Know I Learned in Kindergarten.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah, but I began to learn from a spiritual perspective. Everything I need to know, I was given before I was even conceived. But what my job now is to remove the distractions, to remove the noise, to remove borrowed beliefs, to remove ideas that aren't mine and don't serve me, and then to begin to live from that place, which is very, very different. When you're learning to live from an internal place outwardly versus operating from an experience where I'm looking to gather things externally, thinking somehow that's going to heal what ails me internally.
Well, let me jump in with so many openings in the conversation. The idea of becoming not a victim of the thoughts that you previously thought, that you realize that the thoughts are meaningless, but you thought they were important, And when they're meaningless, there's no need to keep them propped up anymore in the reality in which you live. And so you sort of took the eraser on the chalkboard and erased all the thoughts, and that left everything blank. And so when everything is blank, everything just is. And so you are in a state of consciousness in which everything just is. And since everything just is, then you can choose how you want to create the isness for yourself. And most people are a victim of their thoughts, and you're no longer a victim of your thoughts because you're awake in each of the moments. That's true. Your awakening Musi talks about potential. What's the potential in this moment? It's not like you bring something to the moment. It's what's the potential that we can create, and it boils down to love. And so I got what you're saying, and let's talk to the audience about, we're audio, they can't see the video, but you can see the video. So people have their own glasses on, their own lenses you talked about. And so let's talk about how they can begin to take the lenses off without having to experience the things that you experienced to take the lenses off.
I love the analogy of taking off those darkened lenses, or, you know, sometimes even people call, you know, rose colored glasses. We don't have to have a dark lens that needs to be changed in order to have a lens that needs to be changed. I think for me, what I'm learning is that there is not a lens. And anytime there's a lens and that there's a distraction, we're not seeing things as they are. So it's not about changing the lens. It's about taking off those lenses. So I really love this analogy. And for me, one of those things that I think has been most instrumental in my journey of letting go,
right,
things I thought I believed, or even letting go of narratives of my life when I was younger and holding tight to those that, as if they are somehow my identity.
Yes, yes.
And so I'm going to use some words here, but I'm going to define them as we're talking, because I always think it's really important, especially when we use words that feel common, that we understand what it means to the person who's using those. And so often in our spiritual journeys, especially when we're talking about letting go, or we're talking about giving back to the universe what is rightfully the universe's, oftentimes we'll hear things like conditioned thinking or programmed thinking. And what I'm learning is that both of those things are very negative. And for me, I like to try to stay in either a neutral or at least an optimistic or positive space that has possibility.
You bet.
And so I've learned to think of those ideas, conditioned thinking, programmed thinking, as borrowed belief. And what is a borrowed belief? Well, a borrowed belief is no different than conditioned thinking or programmed thinking. The difference is the intention. And the way we receive that information actually holds us accountable to the fact that we've received it and held on to it for one reason or another. Now, it served us. So there's no need to vilify that borrowed belief, because it brought us to where we are here. And so for me, the very first step in shifting the way that we look at life is not to vilify and therefore cancel, you know, and cancel culture world.
Right.
Past narrative, a past experience, a past belief, but genuinely to express gratitude openly and excitedly that whatever that belief was, it's carried us to where we are now. And it's carried us to the threshold of the opportunity to see things differently. And seeing something differently, or seeing something through fresh eyes, doesn't mean that we have to eradicate, eliminate, and completely cancel what brought us to this moment. Matter of fact, if we do, there's now an incompleteness to our past.
Right.
What happens in that space is, if there is a sense of incompleteness, our ego jumps in, because our ego says it needs to be full and we need to tell the story. So in that space of recognizing that so much of what we believe is borrowed belief, what do I mean by a borrowed belief? Well, a borrowed belief could be anything from, well, that's a boy's job and that's a girl's job, to what we believe about our creator. And it's societal. It's things that change based on the culture or the organization or the group that we're in. And so that borrowed belief might be something. For example, I grew up in an environment where we were taught predestination. And I thought I believed that. Now, how do I know that I thought I believed that?
Well, predestination. Tell me about a predestination. That means you're not responsible, or you are responsible, or what?
Oh, predestination means that predestination is essentially God, source, spirit has chosen a handful of select few that will actually matriculate onto heaven.
And you're one of those people.
No, I'm not one of those people.
So you were taught that you were predestined? That was the belief that you bought into?
Right.
And then you let it go.
Oh, I didn't let it go until a long time after. I mean, I was 35 years old when I finally was able to see how that did not serve me. Now, there was an uncomfortableness with it because it didn't resonate with my true being. I didn't understand that that's what the uncomfortableness was. But imagine being a six-year-old child being taught, you're going to hell. And oh, by the way, in today's Sunday school, we talked about the rapture. Your dad is a deacon in the church, so he's going to heaven. So on the car ride home, we're talking about the rapture. And all I could think of was, well, if dad goes now to heaven, I'm in the back seat of this station wagon. I'm going to hell real fast because he's going to ascend and I'm going to go to a fiery burning crash.
And so those are thoughts that you're thinking in your mind.
Exactly. They're beliefs that I'm buying into. And how do I know I'm buying into them? Because the emotion of fear is coming up. If I didn't buy into the belief, there would be no fear. If I didn't buy into the belief, there would be no sense of solace that, well, at least it's predetermined and there's nothing I can do about it. I didn't buy into those beliefs. They were borrowed beliefs. And I now know that they were borrowed because they didn't resonate with me. They brought fear. They brought concern. They brought confusion and frustration.
They might even have brought cancer.
Exactly. To me, it's the compilation of those borrowed beliefs that disallow us from seeing our true essence as a spiritual being having a human experience, referring that to the kind of the human divine coincidence. So how do we navigate this human experience as a spiritual being when we begin the process of waking up? Especially because I don't know about you or your listeners, but my experience, don't nobody around you wake up at the same time, in the same speed, or in the same way you're waking up. And so it can feel really lonely and really dark. But if we don't take the time to begin questioning, to see where those borrowed beliefs may have served us, but no longer do, and if they no longer serve us, then what is the belief that comes in to take that place to carry us forward?
Sure.
It's not as simple as just sitting back on our laurels and saying, oh, I'm an awakened being now. And so therefore I have all the answers I could ever look for. Because the reality of my experience in this space of awakening is that the more that the human experience falls away, the fewer questions reside.
Yeah. I remember Sadhguru was talking about all these people who ask questions, and after a while, they have no more questions to ask, because there's no need to question. You now are in that space of isness where everything just is, and to be able to the way I see it is that there's two voices inside people's heads. And there's the dominant voice, the voice of the ego. Those are all the borrowed beliefs that you use to try to understand what's going on in front of you. And then you realize that you've been hoodwinked. You have been fooled to believe something just because you just happen to be an American, just happen to be a Christian, just happen to be born that way, just happen to be that color, just happen to be that way. And so everybody has a different perspective. But the second voice, I look at the second voice as the voice of grace, the voice of love, the voice of, if I had a choice about what to do in this moment of now, I have the ego voice, which is defending my identity, and I have the voice of grace, the voice of love, compassion, joy, and bliss. And son of a gun, all I got to do is begin to pause, take a breath. What would love say?
Right.
Love would say whatever that piece of junk that you see in the movie in front of you that you think is wrong is your projection onto it based on those beliefs that you're holding on to for your identity. And so you've been able to create a space between the beliefs that you have, whatever the beliefs are.
Right.
You've been able to create a space of choice, and that puts you right into the driver's seat of the Holy Spirit, the grace. And so we are predestined. We already came in the Holy Spirit, and so we already came in a spiritual being, and we're fooled to think that we're human. We're fooled to think that we are our identity. And so you have your identity, but it's you use it for the benefit of the all rather than the benefit of the me. So I understand clearly what you're saying, because it comes from the observation. So you are in an observer seat. You are able to observe the movie rather than be the victim of the movie or whatever the movie. You observe the movie from a space of stillness, space of enlightenment, space of clarity. And so that's exciting to meet folks like you, because you're an inspiration. You radiate a way of being, a possible way of being that most people are, what are you talking about? I don't know what you're talking about. So,
well, I think for so many of us, we just haven't been introduced to the idea that life could be different. And I think that there's also this belief, especially here in our Western culture, that there needs to be some sort of a catalyst to awakening. And I used to be a believer of that belief, that borrowed belief that there needs to be a catalyst. And let's fast forward to October 2022 for me. And I had a stroke. And part of that experience for me in kind of mainstream thought would be an NDE, a near-death experience. And in that experience, what was revealed, what feels so certain, is that, again, and the belief of a near-death experience is very young in the minds of humans. I think 1975, Dr. Moody is the first official scientist to really talk about near-death experiences, to compile the stories and to bring those into the mainstream marketplace for exposure into the public eye and into a broader consciousness. Well, for me, what I'm recognizing in the experience that I had is that it wasn't a near-death experience. It was actually what I'm referring to as an FLE, a fuller life, capital L, experience. There's an opening to consciousness when one finds themselves in that space. And there weren't questions. There weren't answers. This sense of love that so many people talk about, for me, what I brought back from that momentary experience, which was more than just a moment, but what I brought back from that was a number of different things. Is one, we talk about in spiritual circles, we will talk about all being love. and that everything boils down to love.
Sure.
And so for me, that brought clarity to the conversation of love versus evil. And evil is just love misunderstood and very unskilled.
Yep.
Our skill level at love is what we are here working out.
Right.
And in some areas of my life, I am really skilled at that love level. In other areas of my life, I still have an insurmountable amount of work to do on my skill at loving. And that is what shows up. You know, it's like, it's that we get to choose how present we're going to be on that love scale every time we're interacting with our thought, every time we're interacting with another human, anytime we're interacting with another creation, whether it be a blade of grass, a bumblebee, a butterfly, we get to choose. This is where, for me, it is unquestionable that this is a divine space that we reside in. Because this divine space of choosing also means that we must be accountable. Not responsible, not blamed, but accountable. And for me, accountability is showing up and doing the best I'm able. And my best today may be different than my best tomorrow, maybe different than my best in 30 minutes. But in this moment, if I can show up the best I'm able in this moment and demonstrate my highest skill level of love in this moment, what that does is that it then invites those future moments that my skill level in love is going to increase. So that first, you know, aha, that first moment of clarity coming from that fuller life experience versus a near-death experience approach is that if all is love, and I do believe that, then what we're operating on is not good versus evil. We're operating on different skill levels of how love is being expressed. And that changes the way I interact with someone whose skill level at love might not be meeting my standard in that moment.
You bet. You bet.
The other thing that I learned since that experience in my life is that we need not have some sort of medical crisis. It's not required that we have a medical crisis in order to tap into that broader consciousness.
That's good news, by the way. I want to underline that. Some people think you have to go through some traumatic experience. I don't think you do.
Right. It because it is our true essence. It is the foundation of our identity, this global consciousness, this greater consciousness. It's simply something that we get to peel the layers of distraction away on a day-to-day basis, whether it be borrowed beliefs, whether it be an addiction to our emotions. Our emotions are amazing things until we turn them into idols, until we get stuck in one borrowed role or label or another. And here's the thing is, when we talk about being a victim or we talk about being, you know, pick any other label, the first step to letting go of that label is acknowledging the fact that at some point you received that and owned that label, whether it be victim, whether it be cancer patient, when we receive those and take them as our own, it shifts how we engage in our own experience.
The word comes up is the doctor who told you you got 6 weeks is called a hex. H-E-X, a hex. And people try to hex each other. Well, you'll never be able to do that. Oh, really? Oh, okay. And so, but the hex will not have an effect if you can realize the person is trying to hex you. They're trying to program you. You're not going to be able to do that, you know. So that's a program that I'm sticking out there. And you reach a point. What you're describing is you're no longer, I use the word victim, you're no longer at the effect of other people's program and what other people say. You're no longer at the effect of your own thoughts. And what came to mind is that when you do the internal exploration. You have a love light. And so when you see things that, but you're able to transform it, because when you see something that is uncomfortable or wrong or shouldn't be there, there's some belief that you have that you are now using through the lens to interpret what is in front of you. And when you realize that, wait a minute, I have a choice.
Yes.
And that's a big deal. I wrote it down because you said it. You have a choice to be. You have a choice to be.
Right.
And most people don't have a choice to be. I'm doing what I'm doing. Well, now you're being your identity, but your identity is limited.
Well, and I also caution, you know, as I share this story, and I like that idea of the hex, but I also want to caution us not to add a layer of distraction in the process of removing the veil. And what I mean by that is that, so for example, let's take my doctor at the Mayo Clinic. And look, at first, I couldn't have been more angry at this man. He's the top of his field. He's supposed to know everything. But in that moment of clarity that came, that said, that's his opinion. And I would no more hate someone or be angry with someone or bitter with someone because they express their opinion. I become angry and bitter and resentful when I own their opinion. It's his highest sense of right. I don't believe for a moment that he was trying to cast upon me something negative, some sort of verdict or edict. That was his highest sense of right based on his training and his understanding. So for me to be angry with him, now mind you, I was at first, and I got to work through that. And in working through that, what I learned was back to this conversation about our skill level at love. If I could find a place where Dr. C was actually doing his highest sense of right in sharing information with me, when I take accountability for how I receive that information and what I do with it, I'm no longer angry at the words that Dr. C said to me. I'm no longer upset with him that his highest sense of right isn't going to save my life. I have to be accountable now, because I'm no longer outsourcing my health and well-being to another person.
Right.
And that at first felt really heavy, because especially if you've not done the work to figure out what you believe and who you are and why you're here and all of those things, which I hadn't at that point. Man, that's a daunting task to begin to what felt like dig myself out from underneath, you know, 6 feet of soil, just to get a glimpse of light. And so it's that space of, I encourage and I remind myself constantly, don't add a layer of distraction by surrendering to the emotion of what is showing up. Acknowledge the emotion. Are you kidding me? I was really angry with Dr. C when he shared this news with me. How dare you? How dare you wait till now? How dare you not do something before? There's all kinds of narratives, but all of those narratives are ego.
Yes.
Ego is saying that I have to fight for my existence. Well, our spiritual identity says none of that's true. Cancer is showing up in your experience to awaken you to your truth. It doesn't have to be the verdict. It's not. Look, to me, that prognosis was essentially the dash on my tombstone. And I get to decide what I'm going to do with the dash. Look, I was born at a certain time, and my body is going to, it's going to end. It's going to stop working. And that date will also be on my tombstone. But in the meantime, I get to decide each and every moment what I'm going to do with that dash. And what I've chosen to do with that dash is not to question from a place of being a maverick or being contradictory or being a rebellious soul. There was a time in my life when that was my purpose in questioning. But my purpose in questioning now is not to find an answer. My purpose in questioning now is to surrender to what is and to learn to see the good in what is. I'm a quadriplegic now after my stroke. And for somebody who was a type AAA personality before my stroke, I was a goer. You'd get it done. If it's up to me, if it's going to be, it's up to me. Like, are you kidding me? That was me. And yet the universe, consciousness, divine mind knew that what I needed was to slow down my physical experience so that my metaphysical lessons could come forward. So that the metaphysical, that the oneness, that the divine idea that was unfolding in my experience would not be quite so drowned out by my human activity. Because I was so committed to the belief that to be successful, to be who I was supposed to be, I had to be busy. I had to be going. I had to be doing. And so for me, the way the universe met my needs so that I could continue to grow is that my body ceased to operate the way I thought it needed to operate in order for me to bring value and worth to this human experience, not only for myself, but for people around me. And I will tell you that as soon as I let go, as soon as I began to let go, saying it's completely gone would be really self-righteous. But as soon as I began to let go that my identity was wrapped up in what I could do for others, I began to realize the value and worth that I had carried since before my conception. I'll give you another example, and this is one that most people know, Stephen Hawking.
Sure.
And he's kind of one of those, I call him God whispers, angel messages, aha moments, however you refer to him. I'm laying there in bed, unable to move anything beneath my shoulders. And I was pissed. And all of a sudden, the idea of Stephen Hawking came into my head. It's like, I have nothing to give. I have no value now. And it's like all of a sudden, just from deep within, came this laughter, this nonsensical, hysterical laughter. Because people would be hard-pressed to accuse Stephen Hawking of not contributing to our world. His body didn't operate the way everyone else's does. He wasn't even able to speak. And yet what he brought into this earthly experience cannot be denied. And so it's that moment of comparison. Not that one is better or another, but the example in place of comparison of overcoming the different doesn't make it wrong. It just makes it different. And it also brings to the forefront the idea of this sense of oneness, this sense of universal consciousness. Because here's the thing. I may have an idea. But now I get to invite someone into my experience to help me act upon that idea. And that's that reminder that, look, the body isn't very, it can't be used in the same way if the left foot thinks that it's supposed to be doing the right hand's job. Stress is the result of doing a job that's not mine to do. Disease is the result of asking our body to do a job it's not meant to do.
I love it. It's very clear, Gabby. It's Babs. It's very, very clear when you speak. And so it is, it's illuminating. It's all the things that you say, the way you put them together. It's the definition of a guide is showing someone the way after having been there themselves. So you are a guide, for people who haven't quite reached the level of the scale of love or the vibration that you have achieved, and your desire to, you know, to have the idea and then bring people in and realize that you were always doing for others, which was draining your own power from yourself, taking care of yourself. And now it's just you're a beaming light now. You are a light of clarity. So we're going to complete, and I'm sure that people would like to know how to reach out to you. Everything will be in the show notes. So all the contact things that you give us will be in the show notes. And right now, if people would like to make a connection, how do they connect to your world?
Well, the easiest thing to do is check out the show notes, because everything is my name, Amy Lynn Carroll. My website, amylynncarroll.com, Instagram, Amy Lynn Carroll, Facebook, also Amy Lynn Carroll. On my website, I have a button you can push where you can reach out and leave me a voicemail message. We talk about this idea of being a guide. And for me, the role that I feel like I get to meet and to fulfill for people is that of, I call myself a chief travel partner. Because a travel partner knows when they're the navigator, when they're in the driver's seat. Sometimes chief travel partner's in the back seat taking a nap and leaving it up to you. But the key is that there's nothing. Helen Keller says something to the effect of, there's nothing so bad in life that you can't make it better by the way you take it. Well, I believe that there's nothing so challenging in life that it can't be overcome with the support of a good travel partner. You have to do the work. I have to do my work. That doesn't mean we have to do it alone. And so reach out to me on my website, Instagram, Facebook, drop me a message on WhatsApp. It's all there. I look forward to creating the space where you feel safe to explore your questions, because that's what I was looking for all those years ago. And I found it in the most unsuspecting place, but I found it. And I invite each of you to look for that safe space to explore for yourself.
Oof. What a nice way to tie it up in a beautiful bow. All right. Well, thank you very, very much for being a guest on the Mindful You podcast, for sharing your story with our listeners, and for being who you are. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. Blessings.
Blessings to you. Thank you for listening. And please catch us on the next great episode of the Mindful You podcast. And please share us with your friends and fellow travelers on the path.